In 1905, India's air was filled with the throbbing pulse of rebellion, the cobblestone streets of Bengal dreaming of freedom and enlightenment and an almost illusionary enchantment. The people's blood vessels were filled with that giddy rush of adrenaline, not quite enough to mask the tinge of fear and uncertainty, the type that only comes during those historical moments where everything is filled with happening, where repression doesn't suppress but builds martyrs, and where patriotism sweeps in through pamphlets delivered with each turn of the newspaper boy's bike pedals. About these days, Satyendra Bose wrote, "We must do something for our country just to show the British that we are in no way inferior." Science was no longer reserved for those brilliant white men in stiff wigs and a few titles in front of their names. Through science, it was possible to do things and improve them. By the time Mahatma Gandhi marched to the coastal village of Dandi in 1930, the generations before him had seasoned India's reputation with scientific discoveries that spread like wildfire. And at the forefront of this flame were two men, one of them an only son of a middle-class Bengali Kayastha family, and the other the fifth child of a poor shopkeeper. Both born at the height of British imperialism, both with extraordinary intellects that were recognized early on. Born 1 year apart, their paths would cross in 1913 and 1915 at Calcutta University, with a middle-class native finishing first in the mathematics class and the village genius right behind him, placing second both years. They would go on to make internationally recognized discoveries, earning respect from their contemporaries such as Einstein and Dirac, and both advancing the distribution of science in their country. Their names were Satyendranath Bose and Meghnad Saha, who would pass on their legacy to the namesake bosons that structure our universe, the theoretical Bose-Einstein condensate and statistics, and the Saha equation used by astrophysicists around the world. Today on The Helix Show, we'll examine how the paths of Meghnad Saha and Satyendranath Bose crossed, and how both men revitalized India's scientific revolution and cemented their names in the history of science for years to come. Our story starts on October 6, 1893, in the village of Sheratoli in the Dhaka district, now in Bangladesh, of undivided India still under the British Raj. That day, a young boy named Meghnad Saha was born to Jagannath Saha, who ran a small grocer's shop in the village, and his wife, Bhuvaneshwari Devi. Meghnad was a fifth child out of eight children. And though they weren't very well off, it's said that his mother was so adept at running the home that the children didn't feel the lack of anything in their childhood. Just a few months later, on New Year's Day of 1894, Satyendra Bose was born in Calcutta, the eldest and only son of his seven siblings. His family was in the Kayastha caste, and his father, Surendranath Bose, was an accountant in the East Indian Railway Company, but was fascinated with science and math, running a small pharmaceutical company. His mother, Amodini Devi, was the daughter of a wealthy lawyer. In Sheratoli, Meghnad went to school in his village but often had to tend the shop with his father. Frequent flooding in the Bengal province combined with lack of resources would often cause financial losses for him and his neighbors. His family had no plans of education for him given their means, but one of his teachers, Dr. Ananth Kumar Das of Simulia, pushed for his family to allow him to continue his studies. And with the help of his oldest brother, Jaina, he joined a school 10 kilometers away from home, where he lived with a local doctor in exchange for doing household chores. While his brothers had already quit school to earn money, young Meng Nod spent his time scrubbing floors and reading textbooks. In 1905, when Saha was 13, he was admitted to the collegiate school in Dhaka, the oldest school in Bengal. He dove into his studies and also discovered the nationalist movement. That same year in 1905, Lord Curzon, the Viceroy of British India, decided to partition Bengal into East and the West, which was seen as a political move to undermine the growing nationalism in the country. Many people in Bengal regarded this partition as an insult to their motherland. It turned many Bengalis in the western province into a linguistic minority. In response, Rabindranath Tagore composed the famous song Amar Sona Banglar, which you heard in the intro, which later became the national anthem of Bangladesh. Due to his political involvement in nationalistic protests, the collegiate school rusticated Saha. Satyendra Bose, on the other hand, was fed a fascination with science and math as a young boy. Each morning before leaving for work, his father would write arithmetic problems on the floor for Satyendra to solve. Satyendra always solved these before his father returned home. At age 5, he was enrolled in his local elementary school, and when he was 13, just like Saha, he enrolled in a prestigious school, a high school called the Hindu School. Both Saha and Satyendra were recognized as outstanding pupils in math and science, with their teachers foreseeing their fate as renowned mathematicians. By 1909, at age 15, Satyendra Bose graduated from high school after only 2 years and began a Bachelor of Science degree at Calcutta's Presidency College. Thanks to his pronounced genius, Saha was recognized by a private school named Kishori Lal Jubilee, which gave him a free scholarship and stipend to study. In 1909, when Bose graduated from high school, Saha would clear the entrance exams to Dhaka College, ranking the first among all the candidates from East Bengal. In 1911, he joined Satyendra Bose at the Presidency College, along with other famous peers who would make names for themselves, Nan Ghosh and J.N. Mukherjee. Their teachers were among the likes of Prafulla Chandra Ray, who established the first Indian research school and pharmaceutical company, Jagadish Chandra Bose, who was the first to demonstrate wireless transmission of microwaves. Ray is known for his belief and recitation of the quote, "A man may desire victory always, but he should welcome defeat at the hands of his own disciples." And though I wouldn't call it defeat, rather, probably one of the greatest successes, Prafulla Ray's disciples were not only the top of their graduating class, but some of the smartest minds in the whole world. Nan Ghosh developed the dissociation ionization theory, and Mukherjee would go on to create agricultural research institutes and become a prominent professor and public figure. And let me just stop here. Can you imagine what it would be like being in a room with all those people? Of course, none of them would have known that they'd go on to make all these scientific discoveries, but just imagine that atmosphere and maybe even the competition of just being around such brilliant people. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you might know how much I like Richard Feynman, and I kind of get the sense that this would be the same feeling of being in that room when Feynman was actually there teaching, and frankly, I'd probably be really scared, but also have the sense that I could have done anything, which I'm not sure, but I would imagine what the atmosphere of that time in India would have been like. After this stage of their education, most scientists would probably enroll for a PhD degree. But for Bose and Saha, there were a few obstacles. World War I had just begun in 1914, and European scientific journals were now arriving in India infrequently. This was really frustrating because physics in Europe seemed to be alive with new possibilities in quantum theories and relativity. 1905, the year of Bengal's first partition, was also Einstein's Annus Mirabilis, or Year of Miracles. In 1913, Einstein would be improving upon his equivalence principle, calculating the deflection of light by the sun's gravity with Riemannian space-time. My point is, it's nearly impossible to understand all the factors that contributed to Saha and Bose's success. John Donne's Devotions Upon Emergent Occasions is often quoted with the saying, "No man is an island." Both men built off the foundation established by millions of scientists before them and had teachers and advisors who believed in their success. German and French science was revolutionizing the world in their age. And whether that provided a scientific atmosphere for them to thrive, or a sense of burning competition to establish their nationalism, or both, I can't say definitively. Maybe it was some gene that made their dendrites larger and made it easier for them to learn new things. And maybe it was his parents' struggles and sacrifices that he took for education that drove Saha to greatness. And maybe it was his father's passion for understanding the universe that let Bose become the world's greatest physicist, or among the world's greatest physicists. Although from very different backgrounds, both men were united in their thirst for knowledge and the shared experience of being prevented from the privilege of knowledge because of their country's history and political climate. PhD programs were also new to the University of Calcutta, and pay was much lower for Indian scientists than their British counterparts. Luckily, Sir Asutosh Mukherjee, a mathematician and vice-chancellor of the University of Calcutta, had received a large amount of money from two Calcutta lawyers to promote advanced education for Indians. In 1914, Sir Asutosh began spending the money, establishing new professorships and research programs. He gave Bose and Saha scholarships for postgraduate work beginning in 1916 and placed orders for the most useful academic journals. He also gave the graduate students access to his private library of math and physics books, more advanced than the books that were publicly available. Meghnad Saha and S.N. Bose were both appointed as lecturers in the Department of Mathematics at the University College of Science in Calcutta University. Saha, along with teaching postgraduate students, wanted to conduct research but had no research facility, a lack of funds, and no guidance. At this point, his research came from self-studying and self-funding. Saha also studied the German language, and in 1917, his first research article on Maxwell stresses was published in the Philosophical Magazine, which was the highest journal of science when he was just 24 years old. And eager to relieve this burning itch to test his scientific musings, he used the money he received from a scholarship for writing a dissertation on the Harvard spectral classification system to go to Europe, working in the lab of Alfred Fowler and Walther Nernst, who was known for his Nernst equation in 1887. In Germany, Saha came in contact with Einstein, Planck, and Sommerfeld, and would keep in contact with them for the rest of his life. It was in the lab environment and in the company of many, many spectrographs of stars from Harvard University when Saha first began brainstorming a theory of ionization that would determine the temperature of stars from spectroscopic data. This would later become the Saha equation. Saha knew that the stellar atmospheres were hot and sparse, so they would behave like classical gases, following the Maxwell-Boltzmann distribution. From the Boltzmann equation, which gives the number of atoms at different excitation states, it was known that for hydrogen ions to have excited electrons, very high temperatures would be required, the order of 85,000 Kelvin. But Balmer absorption lines, which are produced by electrons in hydrogen atoms making an upward transition from the second orbital, were strongest at a much lower temperature of 9,520 Kelvin. Clearly, something was responsible for the diminishing strength at higher temperatures. Saha proposed that the answer lied in considering the relative number of atoms in different stages of ionization. Different ionization energies are required to remove electrons from different elements. For example, the energy needed for an electron to jump from the first to second hydrogen orbital is 13.6 electron volts. To derive an equation for the relative number of ionized particles, Saha found a partition function, the weighted sum of the number of ways an atom can arrange its electrons with the same energy, with the most energetic and less likely configurations receiving less weight. The result was a function dependent on temperature and the number density of free electrons, which is also related to the pressure of electrons. Published in 1920, his equation, combined with Boltzmann's, correctly modeled the observed Balmer lines and found use in many more stellar astrophysics formulas, such as the Sacher tetrode equation for the entropy of an ideal gas. Later, Rosslind, the famed Norwegian physicist, would say, The impetus given to astrophysics by Saha's work can scarcely be overestimated, as nearly all later progress in this field has been influenced by it, and much of the subsequent work has the character of refinements of Saha's ideas. Saha returned to India in 1921, joining the University of Calcutta as the Khaira Professor of Physics. Again, troubled by the lack of funds, which prevented him from doing further research, he moved to Allahabad University in 1923, maintaining a position as chairman in the Department of Physics for 15 years. In 1927, Dr. Saha was elected Fellow of the Royal Society, and later in 1935, the Royal Society gave him 2,000 rupees to buy equipment and tools for research. With this, he started research on thermal ionization in a new direction. In 1938, Dr. Meghnad Saha returned to Calcutta University and helped establish the Institute of Nuclear Physics, which was later named the Saha Institute in his honor. Saha was also the first person to use the principles of Rutherford and Bohr to distinguish between stellar spectra. He went on to suggest that at very high temperatures above 6,000 degrees Celsius, which occurs in most stars' atmospheres, many constituent atoms lose their extrasatellite electrons. His next step was to apply the well-known kinetic theory of gases and the laws of thermodynamics to this type of mixture in stellar atmospheres. Applying numerical formulas from kinetic theory to gaseous mixtures of free electrons, ions, and atoms, Saha suggested that for the atoms of an element, fission or ionization occurs not only by high temperatures, but also by very low pressures. At high temperatures or low pressures, the process of splitting an atom into electrons and fragments continues on its own until an equilibrium is established between the rate of division and the rate of recombination. Saha's equation is the only mathematization of these ideas and can be used to account for ionization in any stellar atmosphere. At the same time, Bose's discoveries came from his diligence in preparing for his lectures. One problem he faced was Planck's radiation formula. This formula was Max Planck's solution to the failure of classical physics to account for the range of electromagnetic radiation frequencies emitted by a hot body. Earlier, Lord Rayleigh thought of stars as perfect blackbodies, or objects that absorb all incoming light waves, filled with electromagnetic radiation, where wavelengths would be certain multiples of the radius. These wavelengths should have had an energy of Boltzmann constant times the temperature, and he derived an energy density roughly proportional to the wavelength of light to the negative fourth power. Physicists noted immediately that if the wavelength of light became smaller, the energy would become infinite by this model, a solution so absurd it was dubbed the ultraviolet catastrophe. Later, Wilhelm Wien found another solution through the Stefan-Boltzmann laws, but with the opposite problem. His model plotted wavelength to the negative fifth power multiplied by E to a factor with wavelength in the denominator, which only worked at very low wavelengths and failed at longer ones. So Max Planck founded quantum theory in 1900 when he modified Wien's solution by proposing that if energy is quantized, in other words, if energy only comes in lumps of certain fixed multiples, the model would make sense. His waves could only have specific energy values which were multiples of hc over lambda, and the constant h became known as Planck's constant, equal to 6.626 times 10 to the negative 34. And his Planck function catalyzed an entirely new way of understanding physical phenomena. In 1905, Albert Einstein took Planck's proposal of quantized energy and applied classical Boltzmann statistics to it, which described the behavior of a large number of gas particles that are all distinguishable from each other. This allowed Einstein to describe the photon for the first time. Einstein's work was brilliant, but most physicists rejected the idea of photons because it was well established by experiment that light was a wave. And of course, nobody at this time knew about wave-particle duality, which was covered in my episode about Einstein and Heisenberg. But let's go back to Bose. Almost a quarter century after Planck's first quantum paper, Bose was preparing to teach Planck's radiation law to class. But he wasn't really happy about this because something about Planck's theory just didn't sit right with him. So in the lecture, he intended to show students that the theory was not right, but accidentally he made a mistake, which unexpectedly gave a prediction that agreed with experimental results. The error was a simple probability mistake. Similar to arguing that flipping two fair coins would produce two heads one third of the time, something that would appear wrong to anyone with a basic understanding of statistics, but I'll touch on this a bit more later. The results it predicted agreed with experiment, and Bose realized that it might not be a silly mistake after all. He accepted the blunder and took a firm position that the Maxwell-Boltzmann distribution wouldn't be true for all microscopic particles. He dove into studying the probability of finding particles in various states in phase space, where each state is a little patch having a phase volume of h to the third. And this birthed the inklings of what would be later called Bose-Einstein statistics. In contrast to the Pauli exclusion principle, he found that some states of particles enhanced the likelihood that others around them would be in the same state, which is kind of wild. Bose adapted this lecture into a short 4-page article called Planck's Law and the Hypothesis of Light Quanta, and submitted it to the Philosophical Magazine, the same journal where Saha's review was published. Unfortunately, the publication just didn't see the value in his ideas and rejected the report. And in my opinion, that kind of lands them on the wrong side of history. Imagine being the journalist who rejected that paper. It kind of reminds me of a story my comp sci teacher told me about buying like $500 worth of Dogecoin and selling it the day before he would have exploded his profits. Probably looking back, that person realized his mistake because, undaunted, on June 4th, 1924, Bose sent his paper directly to Einstein and requested republication in one of the really famous journals at that time, the Journal of Physics. And he wrote in his letter, "I have ventured to send you the accompanying article for your perusal and opinion. I am anxious to know what you think of it. You will see that I have tried to deduce the coefficient 8 pi v squared over c cubed in Planck's law independent of the classical electrodynamics." This was because Planck's quantum law contained a factor from classical physics, 8 pi v squared over c cubed, but the mixing of classical and quantum theories in one equation was kind of not a good thing and a discomfort for physicists working in the field. Bose was able to produce the 8 pi v squared over c cubed factor without using classical physics. Instead, it just arose naturally from the argument that photons with equal energy were indistinguishable from another. And though the paper was only 4 pages long, Einstein was immediately impressed. He personally translated Bose's work into German and arranged for it to be published in the Journal of Physics. He replied to Bose about a month later in a letter and said that his work was, quote, "an important step forward." And this is just a sweet turn of fate because Bose had earlier translated Einstein's article on the theory of general relativity from German to English with Meghnad Saha when they were still peers at Calcutta. Bose's translated paper came out in 1924. The reason Bose produced accurate results was that since photons are indistinguishable from another, you can't treat any two photons having equal quantum numbers, like polarization or momentum, as being two distinct identifiable photons. So by analogy, if coins were to behave like photons, the probability of producing two heads would not be 1/4, like in classical statistics. In classical statistics, both coins are distinguishable. The possible outcomes of tossing two coins would be either landing two heads or landing two tails, or the first coin landing heads and the second landing tails, or the first coin landing tails and the second landing heads. So the chance of getting two heads is 1 out of 4 chances. But Bose, when he was giving the lecture, made the mistake of saying the probability, which, by the way, this is an analogy, not exactly, he was not dealing with coins at the time, but he made the mistake of saying that the probability would be 1/3, because there's 3 possibilities: producing 2 heads, 2 tails, or 1 head and 1 tail, if the coins are not distinguishable. It turns out that this seemingly amateur mistake leads to a concept of distinguishability and lampooned what is now called Bose-Einstein statistics. The more Einstein thought about Bose's paper, the more he was impressed by the possibilities it offered. He decided to apply Bose's quantum statistics to a gas made of atoms. At low temperatures, bosons behave in a way that an unlimited number of them can condense into the same energy state, which allows the wave nature of these particles to merge and form one single wave. And this really unusual property also gives rise to a predicted special state of matter, the Bose-Einstein condensate, which Bose and Einstein were never able to observe in their lifetime. Fermi, Dirac, and Bose-Einstein statistics apply when quantum effects are important and the particles are indistinguishable. Quantum effects appear if the concentration of particles are equal to a value called the quantum concentration. And this is basically where the intraparticle distance, so the distance between two adjacent particles, is equal to a value called the thermal de Broglie wavelength, so that the wave functions of the particles are barely overlapping. And it's this same condition that's used to hypothesize tunneling effects in the sun that allow protons to overcome the Coulombic energy barriers because they're both positively charged. And this prediction, or this quantum correction, actually lands us closer to the observed temperatures at the center of the sun. So the main gist is that Bose's mistake was actually closer to the observed values, and he branched off his own field of statistics. In 1945, Bose returned to the University of Calcutta and taught there for 11 more years. And a year later, in 1946, Pauli Dirac coined two new words to cover the two groups of particles that exist in the subatomic world: the boson, which has integer spins, in honor of S.N. Bose, and the fermion, named in honor of Enrico Fermi. In 1959, at age 65, Bose was given the honorary title of India's national professor. Later, as professor emeritus, he carried out nuclear physics research. He never got a PhD and never won a Nobel Prize, despite the fact that many scientists who later used his math became Nobel laureates. According to physicist Jayant Narlikar, Bose's finding was one of the top 10 achievements of 20th century Indian science. But Bose responded simply to what many regarded as a Nobel Prize snub and said, "I have got all the recognition I deserve." Despite their differences in upbringing, Saha and Bose were champions of a common cause: the spread of science education as a form of liberation and nationalism. Although Saha might be considered more politically involved. In addition to forming many scientific societies and news outlets and committees, Saha wrote extensively on his vision of scientific economic planning for India, and even convinced Congress President Subhash Chandra Bose to set up a national planning committee. During this time, he wrote, quote, "Scientists are often accused of living in the ivory tower and not troubling their minds with realities, and apart from my association with political movements in my juvenile years, I have lived in the ivory tower up to 1930. But science and technology are as important for administration nowadays as law and order. I've gradually glided into politics because I want to be of some use to the country in my own humble way." So from distinguished scientist, which he remained being for the rest of his life, he shifted his focus to politics, diving out of that ivory tower. And remembering the flooding that caused his family hardships as a child, he oversaw the creation of the Damodar Valley Enquiry Committee, and he started a lot of river projects. In 1952, he was appointed by the government to become the chairman of the Calendar Reform Committee, which focused on establishing a uniform calendar for the nation. And that same year, in 1952, Saha ran as an independent candidate from the Northwest Calcutta constituency against a really powerful Congress member, Prabhu Himatsingka, and he won the contest by a margin of 16%. So as if discovering a fundamental property of ionized substances just wasn't enough, he was also a leader in India's revival as a developing country and noted for his non-stop devotion to his political duties. Although Bose wasn't as involved in politics, he still remained a devout teacher, and he even ran evening classes for children of poor workers. He also advocated scientific discussions in the Bengali language to nationalize science. Unfortunately, all good stories have to come to an end. In 1956, 62-year-old Saha died of a heart attack on his way to the office of the Planning Commission. Satyendranath Bose died of bronchial pneumonia in 1974, living until he was 80 years old. And despite my often cheesy or overdramatic scriptwriting, I'm not a huge fan of cliché. Still, it's impossible to deny that the legacy of Bose and Saha didn't die with them. Reflecting on his long body of work, Bose humbly wrote, "On my return to India, I wrote some papers. I did something on statistics and then again on relativity theory, a sort of mixture, a medley. They were not so important. I was like a comet which came once and never returned." Saha and Bose were both comets, burning so bright among the other stars of their time and amazing everyone around them. Just learning about their tremendous journey and brilliance is almost exhausting. Both men placed with the great burden and gift of intelligence and inquisition that both used their mental faculties to transform the world around them. In 1995, a gas of rubidium atoms was cooled to within a fraction of absolute zero, 1.7 times 10 to the negative 7 kelvins, and this merged about 2,000 individual atoms into the same entity, basically a single superatom, which held together for less than 20 seconds, the first observed Bose-Einstein condensate. The statistics of a Bengali genius, sparked into motion by a simple error and kindled by his genius and collaboration, was experimentally validated to be true, locking Bose's contribution to science amidst a chain of genius discoveries in quantum physics. That same year, the first definitive detection of an exoplanet, the first hot Jupiter orbiting 51 Pegasus b, was detected, which was understood through the high ionization rate of the system's disk that would have been impossible without Saha's equation. Even after death, the two men were united through their ideas that were handed down through the keys of a typewriter, in pages on textbooks, and in lessons on a chalkboard. My inspiration for this podcast episode actually came from a textbook, the infamous Introduction to Modern Astrophysics by Carol Ann Ossley, and my frustration with Saha's equation. And even as a 17-year-old girl living in the 21st century, something about their journey speaks to me, imagining a 13-year-old Saha huddled over a table reading with a fire in his eyes that won't burn out until the day he died. Some part of me longs to have that great sense of absolution Bose must have felt, the sense of having discovered something new in the world and being content and humbled by the scope of his discoveries. I sit here and imagine being in that room of people, eating and breathing science and feeling like they have a purpose in the vastness of space they sought to define. I want to close this episode off with perhaps the most famous Kerouac quote from On the Road, which I kept thinking back to when writing the script. But before I do, please accept this apology right now for all my mistakes in pronunciation and any missed historical nuances. This topic is definitely not my specialty, or any topic really. But before I ramble more, here is the quote. "The only people for me are the mad ones, the ones who are mad to live, mad to talk, mad to be saved, desirous of everything at the same time, the ones who never yawn or say a commonplace thing, but burn, burn, burn like fabulous yellow Roman candles exploding like spiders across the stars, and in the middle you see the blue central light pop and everybody goes, ah." Thank you so much for listening to The Helix Show. If you're enjoying this podcast, please follow us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify or YouTube for future episodes. And please, please leave me a rating or review. It would really help reach more people. As always, send me an email at chris@helixscience.org for any comments, questions, or concerns. Thank you so much for your time, and I'll see you next time on The Helix Show.
বাংলা আমি তোমায় ভালোবাসি।